Well, hey, everybody. Dennis Tooley here with the MS Warriors Way podcast and Multiple Sclerosis TV. And I am happy to be with you here on a beautiful Friday. And today I'm joined by another MS Warrior who has been at this for quite a while. And she is doing all sorts of great things to inform people, encourage people, and to share the information that she has about this disease that we are all kind of facing. I'm excited to have her on the show. So help me welcome to the podcast and to the show today, my friend, Dulcie Hill. Dulcie, welcome to the MS Warriors Way podcast and Multiple Sclerosis TV.
Good morning, Dennis. Thank you for having me.
Dulcie, it appears that you are probably sitting in a place where you're getting a little bit of sun. I can hear the birds in the background, and so it's a beautiful day where you are as well. And so tell me a little bit about when did you find out, or how, let's go back to maybe how you found out that that you were going to be joining the MS club?
Joining. There wasn't an MS club when I had my first symptoms. People in 1984, people were dying from the disease, and you would see people on scooters or people in wheelchairs and you dreaded it. It was a death sentence. You did not want to get MS. My first symptoms, I used to have numb patches on my skin. And my mom used to, you know, I come from a European hardy family. She used to say, they're growing pains. So I thought they were growing pains there. So when I was, after I first got married, there's a lot of things that happened. I ended up getting optic neuritis, long story. A doctor, a military doctor said, I went in for something that was unrelated. And the military doctor said, do you have anything else wrong with you? And I said, well, I have growing pains. I was 24. And she says, what are you talking about? And I said, well, I've got this numb patch. You would know that as paresthesia. There, that's like, it's similar to the sensation that is altered there. That's a common MS symptom. Well, this doctor looked at me, rolled her eyes and said, I'm getting you to a neurologist right away because that's not growing pains. That something's wrong with that.
Right. There.
And it was a total of 6 weeks. MRI, spinal tap. I was diagnosed, went over to University of Pennsylvania for a second opinion, textbook MS. Now this was in from 1984. I was finally diagnosed in 93. And the very first medication, beta serum, was approved for that. There used to be a lottery to get on that medication, but because I was married to an Air Force pilot, they were able to get me on it right away. That was terrible, terrible on me.
So you were diagnosed at the early stages where prior to that, there was no treatment whatsoever. I mean, they would treat symptoms, but they didn't. Beta-serin was the first of the disease modifying drugs that were approved by the FDA to actually treat multiple sclerosis. Is that right?
Correct. And what was terrible is it was before the internet. I remember my Air Force neurologist left Mattigan in New Jersey, and he transferred. They were phasing McGuire Air Force Base down in Fort Lewis. They were phasing it down. And I had a new general practitioner. It was a black doctor. Loved him, Rodney. I can't remember his name. But what he used to treat me, he was my acting neurologist. He probably was 27 at the time. There, I had this spell where I had trigeminal neuralgia. That is the, I have many videos there. I have a couple videos. It's when you have the stabbing pain and it's like a cluster headache. I know what was happening. All I know is that I ended up in the emergency room more times over the course of a week, and I was listed as a drug addict. They kept giving me Demerol, which didn't help. It kind of dulled the sensation, but it didn't help. So what I did is I went down to the local library, and I sat there, and I had medical books all spread out because my doctor didn't know what was wrong with me.
Right.
And he was prescribing Demerol. Everybody was, couldn't label it there. And prescribing me that. And I found that it was tic duralu, or it was called a type of headache that involved the seventh cranial nerve that was consistent with what I had. And underneath the treatment, Tegretol. So I went to Rodney, or my doctor, and I said, Benson. It's just like, I went to Dr. Benson, and I said, could you prescribe me Tegretol? He did, and it went away. It went away fast, and it didn't get me high, and I loved it. Well, this here was when I had MS. This had to be in 1994. I'm here. I can't believe how wonderful it is to have the internet and to have these, you know, nobody has to go through trying to figure out what's wrong with them again.
Right.
God is good.
Remember, go ahead.
I remember in 93 when I was diagnosed, everybody was walking around. Beta serum was inexistent, and everybody kept saying, you are diagnosed at the perfect time for MS. And that's not true. I look now, and every time I hear of somebody being diagnosed now, and I get emails from people who are scared and they're diagnosed, and I say, you are diagnosed at the greatest time ever to be diagnosed with MS.
Right. Yeah. I know I wasn't diagnosed until 2003. Now, I was having symptoms about actually, my first symptoms kind of started in 1982 or 83. And I had symptoms for such a long time before I was ever diagnosed. But when I was finally diagnosed, there was just the three medications, Betaserin, Avonex, and Rebif. It was Rebif because Copaxone came just a little bit after that. So when I was diagnosed, it was Betaserin, Avonex, and Rebif. And then, even then, people were saying, this was the perfect time for you to be diagnosed because there's more options. And like you said, today, when we've got, 15, 16 medications that are approved, and they're on the edge of approving a couple more, I'm just amazed with the advances in technology. Not only that we have the internet so that you and I can visit, you can be there with the beautiful birds in the background, and I can be here with my dog over here next to me. So the technology is such a great advancement, but the advancement that they've made in treatment has just been great. And I think we're closer now than ever to finding a cure for this monster. You know,
what were your first symptoms?
My very first symptoms, I had numbness in my feet and lower legs that were causing some balance issues. This must have been in 83 because I was a freshman in college and I was playing basketball and having issues. And it's hard to earn a spot on the starting lineup when you fall down and throw the basketball to the opposing team. So they're like, yeah, go sit down, you know. But my feet and my legs were the first thing. And then I started having those unexplained headaches that were so horrible. And they would, they would say, well, you must have migraines. And everything that they would talk to me about the migraines, I'm like, no, that's not how I feel. It was so different. But again, they were kind of guessing at a lot of stuff because at that point, they still didn't have an MRI. I think the newest technology when I was diagnosed was maybe the CAT scan. And they were all, well, let's run you in and have a CAT scan. Well, as we know now, CAT scans don't really see anything or help in diagnosing or identifying multiple sclerosis the way that an MRI does, so. So yeah, it was how I finally got diagnosed years later. I had optic neuritis, and it was, I had double vision, and my peripheral vision was really, I referred to it as my peripheral vision had hiccups, because I would see movement and I looked to see who was there, and there was nothing there, but when I finally, when I finally went to the doctor about it was the day that I stopped at a convenience store to get something to drink, and a lady stepped out from one of the gas pumps, and I thought I was going to run over her. I jumped out of my truck and I was like apologizing for almost killing her. And she looked at me like I was crazy. She was like, you weren't anywhere close to me, go away, you crazy fat man, And, I realized maybe I wasn't that close to killing her, but I thought I was, and I couldn't trust my vision anymore. And that's when I went to my general practitioner doctor and said, something's not right. And he started piecing together my medical history and seeing the pieces that were starting to connect. And so he ordered the MRI and a spinal tap, and we kind of went from there. And that's finally when I was diagnosed, was after all those years of not knowing what was going on and having doctors tell me that it was all in my head, which ironically they were right. It was in my head, so they didn't know what it was, but yeah. So I finally got that diagnosis, and my very first medication was Rebif. I didn't tolerate it very well. I wasn't on it very long, but that was my very first medication was Rebif. So
the evil interferons. There's somebody I was friends with in 95, when the internet first came out. There was a support group for MS online. It was called Jolie's Joint, J-O-O-L-Y, Jolie's Joint. And it was a young gal in England, United Kingdom, who brought it out to all of us there. Just 1 minute here. Apparently, all right. So anyway, and it was so wonderful. But this person that I was friends with used to call it interferon inferno. Inferno, right. Interferon. Because the first levels of interferon, which was the beta seron, also Rebif and all that, was the side effects were that flu-like side effect there. Avonex was a much kinder interferon. It was, I believe, interferon beta versus interferon. One's alpha, interferon alpha, the other one's interferon beta. And I typically am up on my stuff. Copaxone, it used to be COP2. I was in the study program at Jefferson there. It was interesting. I've also been in the study program for Tysabri. I've been on Tysabri, been on most medications, not Lemtrada. I've been on more medications for MS than I have not.
Right. Well, and it's one of those things where you almost have to discover, unfortunately, you have to discover how well you're going to tolerate any one of these medications. Like I said, my first medication was Rebif, and the doctor, you know, my neurologist that prescribed it was pretty pleased with how a lot of the people that he was treating, you know, how they were responding to Rebif and how it was truly helping keep the progression slowed down. So he was pretty pleased with it. My body just didn't tolerate it. I had some adverse reactions to it. And, you know, so I think it's one of those things where you got to listen to your own body. You got to listen to what is going to happen when you're, you know, taking these different medications. But you got to find one that's going to really work for you. And I was on Copaxone for a long time, and it just got to the place where it was no longer keeping pace with the monster. And so I had to make another move. And so it's one of those things people ask me from time to time. They'll say, so what do you think about this medication? Or what do you think about this medication? And my answer is always, I can tell you what I have been on, but it's not going to do you any good for you to hear my stories, other than the fact that you may find some hope from how I reacted and responded to the medications, because we're all so uniquely different. And this monster attacks us in so many uniquely different ways that, you know, you've got to take and discover that a little bit for yourself. And so you got to talk with your neurologist to find out, okay, what are the potential side effects? What are the potential things that I could be looking at? And does the relief and the help of the medication outweigh those potential side effects? Yeah. So.
That's beautiful. What I hear there can only come from somebody who's had MS as long as you have had MS. It's humility. It's humility to acknowledge that you don't have the answers. You are, and I lead God's group by being humble and saying, I am not a doctor. I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know what will work with you. Early on, I used to own a physical fitness gym, co-own that. I used to believe that a certain diet would help. I could have written Wall's protocol. I could have wrote Matt Embry's protocol. I could have done everything with knowledge to say, look, this is how great. I have an active, very aggressive disease. 34 years I've had MS. And I can tell you the first 15, I knew what would help you. God brought me to my knees and humbled me. And I laughed. I used to brag about my eyesight. I can't see you. I need my glasses, and I need to go like this in order to see. I can't see. But you know what? I look at life as an impressionistic painting now. I had this screened-in back porch put on because I don't like bugs there, and it's got a ceiling fan there. And I realize that I don't have the advice. I run MS Live. It's a YouTube channel that people go to, and I'm not the expert. I only host there, and I try to impart a little bit of knowledge I have with based on my experiences. But everybody chats on the right and supports each other. I'm not the star. And I've evolved to being humble to say, whenever young people, they email me, I get berated. I get nasty emails from people who tell me, well, this works for me. I don't need you. This is the way to cure MS. It's like I don't want you to need me. Other people may need you. Other people may need to know what is working for you right now. And what works for you may not work for everybody. I love what you said, because we've been humbled. But you carry around symptoms now that gosh, are almost impossible to live with. What kind of MS you let me think. You told me, and I have it written down there. You have secondary progressive. Yes. Yep. And so you've had it long enough now. Secondary progressive.
Yeah. It's one of those things where I kind of joke about how the doctors, they got together and they said, well, oh, we're going to name this multiple sclerosis, but there appears to be some differences in the multiple sclerosis between these people. Well, this person over here, their symptoms and how their body's reacting to the disease seems to be, it started out and it just continues to progress. There's no relapse to it. There's no relief to it. You know, I mean, there's, you know, it's just always progressing. We'll call that primary progressive. And these people over here, they seem to kind of have, it seems to go into remission and then they have the relapses and it pops back up. So we're going to call that relapsing remitting. And then at some point they said, well, these people, they've had this relapsing remitting that we named it. They've had that for a while, but their symptoms seem to be changing a little bit because they've had the disease for so long. Let's call it secondary progressive. So they changed the names, but it's one of those things where whatever you call it, I don't know that it necessarily changes the outcome or the outlook in terms of how you have to approach living with the monster. You know, you've got to come up with how are you going to respond? How are you going to react? How are you going to decide to live with the changes that are taking place that you can't stop? You can slow it down with the medications. You can definitely slow it down, but you're not going to stop it until we get a cure. So I think that's, for me, that becomes the most important piece of conversation that I try to have with people, is help them see how do you respond to the fact, okay, you've been told you have this disease, you see where the symptoms are. Now, what are you going to do to try to live a full life in spite of the multiple sclerosis?
It's true. I had a neurologist tell me early on, live every day as if it were your last. That changed my outlook when I had to leave my job. I had a high pressure job. I think early on when you have relapsing remitting, I love statistics. 80% of people with relapsing remitting would go into secondary progressive. Now the statistics have changed quite a lot because of these preventive medications. So I look at that. When you have relapsing remitting, I tell everybody, make sure you have a neurologist who has an email that you can get on the phone, because everything was an emergency early on. I'd go to the emergency room to get steroids. Everything, when you first have MS, everything seems to be an emergency. When you have secondary progressive MS, you've had it so long that when the doctor says you've got to come in, the neurologist says, I want you to come in twice a year, you're like, you know, I don't want to pay that copay. I you know, let me just come in once a year. I don't want to go. Nothing is an emergency. Very few things are emergency to me. I've had it too long. And now with secondary progressive MS, I find that I get the most benefit from people who are like the support when different people chime in. A couple days ago, I did the on Thursday, yesterday, I did the MS Live, and I was sitting there and I had cognitive fog. I was struggling there. And everybody was so accepting. And one person said, I want you to take a second, leave the camera and turn on your fan. You look really high, and I did, and it helped, and it's I can give advice, but I'm not good at taking. I can give, let me see, not advice, suggestions. I can suggest, you know, I was stuck at Lowe's and I was hot and I was shutting down. What should I have done? My water container was warm. My ice water had melted. I was in trouble there. And right. People were talking about what you could have done. That the most important thing I could have done is got out of the car instead of the air conditioning, poured it over my head, you know, and cooled down, because everybody with MS knows the hotter we get, the more those nerves swell, the larger the holes get, the less conductive those nerves are, and the more crippled. You right. can't walk. When you're cool, you can walk better. When you're hot, you might not be able to walk at all.
Yeah, the heat just exaggerates the inflammation that we are, you know, we are battling already. And anytime you see that inflammation enhanced and it's causing more problems, you're going to have greater issues. You're going to fatigue a whole lot faster. You're going to have issues walking and processing everything, just because that inflammation is just going to wreak havoc on your system, you know. So, in fact, I've got, I don't think I've released the video yet on Multiple Sclerosis TV, my YouTube channel, but I'm getting ready to release a video on heat and MS. And to talk about what are some things that you can do, I was involved in your session the other day where we talked about what do you do when you get overheated, and we were talking and you were talking about pouring water on your head, and there are so many different things that you can do. But you've got to think ahead, so you're planning for it, you know. And that was the thing that I thought was interesting about the conversation that was going on in the chat while you were talking about, you know, some of the things that you were struggling with that day and how you were just kind of at your end. You had all of the heat issues going on, and you were like, "What could I have done?" And then people were saying, "Well, you should pack an ice box and take some ice and put, you know, water in." And I was like, yeah, if we think ahead and we plan ahead, we have those things. We take our cooler, we put it in the car. So if we're going someplace, you know, okay, I got a cooler with some ice and some cold water. So if I have issues, I have a way to help myself. It's when we don't think ahead and we don't plan ahead that we end up with problems, you know. So
brilliant. It's hindsight. We're just saying hindsight is always 20/20. At the time, I was looking for, I've had this too long not to know what to do. And I found myself in trouble. And you know, I God has allowed me to be humble. A lot of people saw that I was in trouble. Somebody loaded my plant. Somebody put my walker in the car. Somebody helped me check out. They were, people are angels there. That was fine. But the immediate thing to do wasn't getting in the car with the air. The immediate thing to do, I needed someone with MS to say, get out of the car and pour the water over your head. Because I need people like you to not tell me how to pre-plan, but how, what to do in case of emergency, break glass. And that's what we do in MS Live. And what is so beautiful is I have a list of everybody, because I ask, it's a prayer list. I ask everybody, tell me who you are, what type of MS you have, where you live, and what medication you're on. And I run the statistics. most people have secondary progressive MS. And the people who don't, who have relapsing remitting, the average age is 55, but it ranges from 28 up to 78. There, and I look at that, and I think these people with relapsing remitting that can benefit from you, Dennis, or from me saying, in case of emergency, break glass, all right, your legs are dead and you're hot. What can you do? You've fallen. How do you get up? You know, we need to know these emergency things because going to our spouses, our neighbor, family, and making them understand what kind of trouble we are in is not going to help us. Going right. to you. If I go to you and you say, all right, have you considered putting your brakes on your walker? But did you have your brakes on before you fell? And I'd say, no, I didn't. I didn't, and that's probably why I fell. Somebody without MS there, if they say, did you have your brakes on? You're like, you don't get it. Shut up. You don't get it. I only Dennis can tell me to put my brakes on without me being back off. You know, when right. I get information from you, it's like getting wood from Home Depot. If I get information from somebody who doesn't have MS, it's like getting bread from Home Depot. I don't know whether you follow.
Well, I will say my wife, she has two different jobs. Her part-time job, she works for Menards, which is much like a Home Depot, much like a Lowe's. It's a Midwest, I think they're based out of Milwaukee area. So it's kind of a Midwest thing, but you go to Menards and they sell everything. You can buy bread at Menards, which is really weird, you know? That analogy works really well if your place doesn't sell, food items. And so no, here's what I want to ask you, When you find people looking for answers, there are more places available now than ever to find those answers. But when people are coming to you with questions, how many of the questions are you seeing about understanding the technical side of the disease, you know, how do we get this disease and that, or are your questions more, how do I deal with the daily grind of this disease? What are the question? What are more the questions more likely to come to you? What tell me about how the disease is explained medically, or how do I deal with this in my daily living?
You know, what a wonderful question. It's a very insightful question. I have to categorize that and the type of person I am and what I feel I'm called to do there. And I'm not called to answer everybody's questions. So there's a lot of people without MS that come up to me and ask me about MS because I, believe it or not, I don't have tattoos. I don't have a T-shirt. I do have a sign on the back of my car that says MS Frontiers. I'm visible. People look at me and know something's wrong with me. People who are around MS know right away of MS because we all walk a certain way. You know, we have signs there. So people who see me at the gym, they'll come up and they'll say, what is MS? So I find I get more of those kind of questions, general question, what is MS? Are you in Special Olympics? That's a common one I get. And I'm like, do you get Special Olympics? Do you get that question? You know, have you thought of them?
Yeah, it's the one I always love is they'll say, oh, you have MS, so you're one of Jerry's kids.
I know.
No.
give you that. And it's hard not to say I have strong opinions. It's hard to say no, you don't. You know, but what I do is I explain. I've gotten really good explaining how a cord plugged into the wall and that cord going to an appliance. My leg is the appliance there, and where you plug it into my brain, that cord, the nerve there. It's the insulation on that wire there that has been affected there. Didn't always be affected. I'm good at explaining that. Other than that, I send them to the MS Society, which will tell people who don't have MS details. People, I'm called to help people with living with this disease. I need people who live with this disease, and I'm called to help people. MSFrontiers.org is a website for people with MS to see what medications there are, the side effects, the diets, the natural stuff, the support exercises, all sorts of things. But it's specifically geared to people with MS, like the MS Association or the MS Foundation, which is more geared towards people suffering with the disease than helping people understand what is MS. The internet is full of people trying to get MS awareness. I'm not about MS awareness. In fact, I don't even care if you understand MS. The goggles, there used to be booths at fairs. Find out what it feels like to have MS. I personally think if you love your family, don't let them put on the goggles or the shoes or, you know, I don't want you to know what it's like to have MS. It's bad enough I have to deal with these symptoms. Yeah. I don't want you to know. I love you. You know, love me as a wife, as a sister, as a daughter. Love me. And my family doesn't subscribe to any of my YouTube channels and Facebook. They don't talk to me about MS. And that's fine. That's
right. So it's, you said MS Frontiers, is it MSFrontiers.com?
.org.
Okay. Yeah. I wanted to make sure that I had that because I was going to pop it up on the screen here so that people could see that and have access to that. Is MS Frontiers, is that something you helped start, or is that something you just had, you got involved with and trying to make sure that people know the resources that are there?
It evolved. In fact, if you go to my YouTube channel, you'll see, maybe 10 years ago, I didn't even know I had a camera on my computer, and I was sitting there, and I did a testimony about my evolution of MS, and it was a red hot mess. And I remember looking into the time and loathing it. And yet now I look back at 10 years ago and I think no makeup, no anything. And you know, it's beautiful. And I could walk then. I could walk a heck of a lot easier. So what, to answer your question, is that it started with a YouTube channel. What happened is my minor is in pharmacology and health there. I love researching medicines. I like getting into the weeds. Whenever I go to the neurologist, I interview the neurologist about evolving fronts on frontiers with MS. And I go to Johns Hopkins, so it's wonderful.
Right.
To be able to do that. Well, I decided that I wanted to start posting that in a forum on Facebook, which I didn't. I just started a group there. All of a sudden, people with MS started joining there, and I started publishing the research that I discovered. So it evolved to MS Frontiers there, because it was the Frontiers. I just named it Frontiers because it was Frontier of research there. So all of a sudden 3,000 people later, 2000, it evolved. It evolved. There was one of my partners, people volunteer, and she wanted to take it political. And I said, no, it can't be political. And even now, it can't be political with what's going on there. We have about 6 different volunteers, and they run branches formats. One is MS Frontier's personal share. That's Debbie Harris, and that's her support group. And that is for people with MS to talk about the daily grind. You can post the medication you're on. You can talk how you're feeling, symptoms, anything goes. You can post an emoji. You know, that's okay. Can't do that in MS Frontier's medical share, because all that is for medical problems, medical reasons. It tends to be for people with medical. There's MS Frontier Secondary Progressive, run by Judy Kerfoot. She's got that group. Cheryl Watkins runs primary MS Frontier's Primary Progressive. There's MS Frontier's Exercise. There is also MS Frontier Diet Nutrition, run by ZC Zanks there. And Exercise is run by Reluca. She is actually in Czechoslovakia, or the former Czech Republic, I should say, there. I'm dating myself. But anyway, it evolved that way. So that, and then, oh, listen, I wanted to post. I have experience in my life of doing web pages, so I wanted to put everything that I had been learning on a website there. So I'm the founder of MS Frontiers, but I'll tell you what, I've been humbled enough to realize that God's worked through me, and when I took my name off everything and gave it to you guys, to all of us, it's not me. It's on me, because I promise you, Dennis, everything in life, in my soon-to-be 52 years of life that I have gone to achieve, I failed at. I have failed. Based on the Lord, He wants something to happen through me, and I take my life out of it. I take Dulce out of it and say, God, use me as you will. And let me touch the lives or comfort the lives of those who come and happen to see me. I succeed. MSFrontiers.org. It's all hugely successful. Money comes in to fund it. We don't incorporate as a nonprofit because it only takes $2,500 every 3 years to keep it going. And we all volunteer.
Well, and that's the thing that I keep going back to when I'm talking with people, is when you do something like that it isn't for you. It isn't just to say, well, I'm going to do this because it'll make me feel important, but you truly put that together because you wanted to help others. And when we put our attention on helping others and lifting others up, the interesting thing is, our situations and our issues don't seem to be as bad. They're still there, but they don't seem to be as bad when we're focused on helping others. And interestingly enough, when I spend my time lifting somebody up, eventually I'm getting higher in every place that I'm going, because I have to go to a higher plane if I'm lifting somebody up. And so one of my constant challenges to people, particularly people with MS who are discouraged, and you know, they're I can't do anything anymore. What are you doing to help others? That's my first question I ask, because when you focus on helping others, yes, your situation is not going to magically change, but when you're not focused on it, things don't seem so bad, and you're going to a better place because you're helping other people to a better place.
You know, so. You're absolutely right. What is the old saying or the old advice? If you start feeling down about yourself, you know, you can't get enough stuff to make you happy, volunteer at a soup kitchen. you know, it but likewise, Dennis, it's bizarre. People will not always remember what you say, but they'll always remember how you make them feel.
Right.
And if they look in my eyes, if they look in your eyes there, they'll feel the love we have for them, the love I believe that that God has for them. And there are many people who are going to watch this, because I'm going to publish this on my channel as well. There's many people who watch this and will feel the love. They'll be brought to watch this because they're in pain. And they'll feel the love. And what do you and I want? Ultimately, we want them to join us in touching the lives of other people who have this disease, because we all have a story. And if MS is a snowflake disease, you know, I can't. You're not my competition. We complement each other, because snowflakes can fit together.
Right.
And we need each other like a web, like a spider web. We need each other. I don't compete with anybody. There are some people who are newly diagnosed that feel that it's a competition. It's not. Life hasn't brought you to your knees yet. And yeah. They'll know. You'll get there. It's like being 15 years. So I wish I was as brilliant as I was when I was 16. Oh, I knew everything.
I wish I could remember half the stuff I knew back then. You know. Well, let's be honest. With the MS, I wish I could remember what I had for breakfast. So, you know.
But. Yeah. It makes the symptoms, some of the symptoms, like we had incontinence discussion the other day, dealing with incontinence. And the greatest thing about not having memory is you don't remember that you had an accident. Oh, I had an accident yesterday. I did, yes, but I had a great dinner. You know, it just, what is, there's an old adage that said, happiness is a short-term memory and good health, right? If you're feeling good in the moment, you forget that you were feeling lousy a minute before.
Yeah.
You're in great.
Well, I always kind of joke about it with my memory issues. I'm not eating leftovers. Oh, look. My wife made chicken. All right. You know, she's like, I made that 2 days ago. Oh, you just made it today. Okay. That's good. You know, so, but yeah, so it's I think honestly, most of what we deal with on a day-to-day basis is less about what is actually going on and more about how we are handling it and how we are choosing to frame what's going on. If we choose to look at it and say, okay, what in this can I find that is positive? And if I can't find anything that is positive here, what can I look back at that I can say has helped me through these situations, and I can use the positive things that has helped me through these situations in the past to get me through this one today? If we make that choice, we make that an intentional choice to focus on finding the best from the past and the best in the present, we can get through anything. But when we focus solely on the negative pieces that are going on today, or if we focus completely on the negative that has happened in the past, that negative will consume us. We will get depressed. We will get down. And our health suffers because we're compounding the issues with our negative, depressive thoughts. So you've got to make a choice.
Abraham Lincoln once said, everybody is as happy as they make up their minds to be.
Exactly.
You can change the way you are. Simply, everybody's got two ways to think of all things, and making gratitude lists, especially in this atmosphere with what's going on there. We are at such an advantage of being tried and tested with having to be positive despite what's going on in our bodies, that now we can look outside of our bodies and see what's going on with riots and protests and all, and say, you know, let's count the blessings that people ought to have. And people are in pain, which is why there's craziness going on. It's pain. And it's pain. It's they're focusing on the negative, trying to get positive through doing things that are negative. And I look at us, if we can demonstrate, we're going to whistle zippity doo-dah, despite walking, emperor's clothes, right? All right, we're naked and we're walking through the town and everybody's looking at us. If we are convinced we are wearing the finest golden clothes there, then it's all attitude. There has been proof that people can heal themselves based on thinking they're healed. And I've often told neurologists, do me a favor and give me a sugar pill and tell me to cure MS. They won't lie to me in that way. They won't lie to me in that way. But I wish it would, because the mind is so strong.
Right. And that's it. It's one of the things that I am constantly challenging people, is to choose to have the mindset that is going to take you to a better place and help you be in a better place. One of my favorite sayings you'll hear me say quite often, we're not born winners. We're not born losers. We are born choosers. And we choose how we're going to approach every situation. We choose how we're going to respond to every situation, and we get to choose the mindset that we're going to go forward with. And if we make that choice and we focus on what's going to take us to a better place and what's going to make us in a better place right now, the outcome will be life will be better. So,
and you know what, Dennis, can you honestly say that you would have evolved to that philosophy without having MS?
Actually, I got to be honest, that's been my philosophy pretty much my entire life. So when I was diagnosed, I didn't spend a lot of time going through the depressive side of the diagnosis. When I was diagnosed, I was actually, and my wife can attest to this, I was relieved that I finally had a diagnosis and I could find a way to go out and attack this monster, versus not knowing and being told that I was crazy, you know, because of the stuff that was going on. So my philosophy has pretty much been that positive approach. Most of my life, I've been that way. When I realized how MS was affecting others, I realized then that it was even more important, and it became one of the pillars of how, not only how I focus on dealing with the monster, but what am I going to do to help others along the way? Because it's not necessarily the way people naturally think. And I don't know that I naturally thought this way. I have parents that kind of live their lives that way, so I grew up with that approach of life. And then I had some great coaches in sports that kind of taught me that same thing through the sports that I played in high school and a little bit in college, until the MS kind of took me sideways and I couldn't play anymore. Dulcie, I want to thank you for taking some time to hang out with me today, because
I do want to say one more thing.
Okay.
I'm telling every single person who has emailed me, who has had MS more than 10 years, has emailed me that they evolved into a better person because of this disease, and everyone ends up being thankful. I mean, they're not thankful for the disease, but thankful for who they made them. So that I want to end on that.
Yeah. Well, and I think that is so true, that when we live life with an attitude of gratitude, we don't necessarily say, hey, I am so thankful that I have MS. I love what it does to my legs. I love what it does to my energy. That's not the case, but because, and I will agree with you, I have become more grateful because of the MS, because it has taught me lessons on the importance of living life in the moment. And it has taught me lessons on finding the good in everything. And so, yes, when you have that approach, so I'm going to be grateful, not so much for the disease, but for everything that I'm learning in spite of the disease. You know, I think it truly is a benefit to us all when we learn those lessons and we grow and become a better person because of it. So Dulcie, I want to thank you so much for coming on and sharing with us a little bit about MS Frontiers. And again, if you want more information, go to msfrontiers.org. Also, Dulcie has her MS Live channel on YouTube. So check that out. Subscribe to that channel. When you subscribe, you know, automatically find a video and give her the thumbs up right away. Let her know that you appreciate what she's doing. Actually, I'll say this: if you're here and you're watching this on YouTube or you're seeing it on Facebook, I would appreciate it if you'd give us the thumbs up and you know, like and share the MS. Multiple Sclerosis TV channel and subscribe to that and give us a thumbs up and tell people about it. In fact, if you found anything in today's discussion with Dulcie and myself that has been beneficial to you, let us know. Go to the comments, leave us comments, and tell us what it was that was helpful for you, because we want to do more of that for you. So let us know what you found helpful. If you have questions for Dulcie or for myself, again, leave it in the comments, and I will do my part to get those questions answered. And if I need to, we'll get Dulcie back on another time, and we'll answer more questions, and we'll make sure that we're providing the information that you're looking for. So, Dulcie, thank you so much for being a part of today, and
thank you for having me.
And I appreciate all that you are doing to encourage and lift people up around you. You have a blessed day, and we will be chatting again very soon. All right? All right, well, that's pretty much the end of today's episode here on Multiple Sclerosis TV and the MS Warriors Way podcast. I do want to thank you for being part of our time. And again, if you found anything helpful, let us know that, and if you can, like us, give us that thumbs up, share it with your friends, subscribe to our channel, and let us know what we can do to improve and make things better, and let us know what you found helpful in today's in this video by leaving us a comment. And so with nothing else for me to say, I'm going to wrap this part up. And thank you so much for being part of the MS Warriors Way podcast and Multiple Sclerosis TV. You have yourself a great day, and do yourself a favor. Live today in a way that's going to make yesterday jealous that they didn't get today, and it's going to make tomorrow giddy with excitement because they know you're coming. So live life like there is no tomorrow.